Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me as always is Fred Moreland, who is excited about his future endeavors. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I have not slept well for most of a week, so last night I went to bed at legitimately like 7:45. It was awesome. I slept like 10 hours. It's really good.
Ooh, that's great. My wife flew to Denver this morning, and of course, Odie woke me up at 4 o'clock. My alarm, just to make sure she got up, woke me up at 5:30. And then Cheddar, our lab mix, woke me up at 9. So sleep is hard to come by for me these days. That's for sure.
Bummer. Well, sorry about all that, but yeah. How are the Vikings going?
They exist. This is the only real dead period. Mini camps are all done. We're not going to get them on the field again until like July 27th. So it's like 5.5 weeks of what the fuck am I going to write about? Yeah. I'm not like a beat writer. I don't get to take a couple weeks off and still get paid. So even though I really am a beat writer, I don't have the cushy job per se. So I'm having fun, but we're making it work. It's the business is what it is, and we're going to get it going.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. But Fred, we got a lot to talk about in the world of wrestling today.
I
think we need to talk about Caitlin Clark. We need to talk about women's basketball for a little while.
Sure, yeah. I'm game. Shout out to the weirdo that got all mad about it while listening to a podcast about men grabbing each other and throwing them around and then using homophobic slurs to describe talking about women playing basketball. Weird. Very normal behavior. But yeah, seriously, there is a little news out of the WNBA that I think is interesting. The Washington Mystics finally won their first game. They're now 1-12. They've just been hit hard by injuries, and they got Brittany Sykes back for half a game, and then she got hurt again. She's gonna miss more time. It's just awful luck. It's also interesting in that the Las Vegas Aces are only 6-5. They're expected to be one of the two top teams by a clear margin this year with Liberty, and they have not been doing that. So I know that they're missing, I think it's Chelsea Gray, one of their lead guards, but, you know, it's still surprising to see them that far down the standings because they're only fifth out of the 12 in the league. So
fun fact, Fred, I am actually going to be going to the Lynx game against the Phoenix Mercury next Saturday night.
Cool.
I know.
You'll get to see Yeah, the Mercury will have Diana Taurasi and Brittany Griner, and they're doing much better than last year when they were legit the worst team in the league. And the Lynx are, they're what, 9-3, which is a hell of a start, better than I expected. But they got a lot of talent, you know.
It's the defense, man. The defense has been bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got the third best, nearly the third best defense in the league, behind the Connecticut Sun, who have been way better than expected, and the Liberty by a tenth of a point. So,
yay, go WNBA.
Well, we got some wrestling free agency notes to talk about, so we'll move on to that. This is going to be a shorter episode than usual because we both got stuff to do. But, grand opening, grand closing kind of things. First of all, Jeff Hardy's contract has expired with AEW. It's expected that he will not be returning. It appears that he will end up in TNA if he hasn't already. I don't think he was in that Hardy House gimmick they did the other night where they decapitated, I forget which woman wrestler it was, but wasn't Steels, was it? Well, someone got decapitated in that weird segment, then Eddie Edwards became a werewolf. So, You know, normal wrestling stuff.
And his wife got decapitated.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who that was, but I can't remember her name.
I think Alicia Edwards.
There we go. Edwards. Yeah, I knew it wasn't Steels, but I was stuck on like Tasha Steels. So, stuff that will happen in TNA and not AEW. I feel like at this point in time, the Hardys have to be in that kind of stuff. And I think TNA is a much better run for them, or better landing spot for them outside of money, basically, because they would obviously get paid more by AEW or WWE. But yeah, we got the end of Jeff Hardy, no real send off or anything, just kind of a quiet contract expiry. And really, outside of anything involving Darby Allin, I feel like it was a pretty damn lackluster run for him. Just not much left in the tank, you know, same for Matt. And end of career, you know, for both of them. And they're just going to be doing the best they can. And, you know, love it or hate it, I do think the best stuff they can do is probably the stuff with TNA, with the pre-tapes and everything and all the gimmicks. So,
and I think it's perfect for them because the people that love it are going to seek it out, and the people that hate it, well, it's TNA. And the people that complain about it being on TNA probably aren't even watching it. So I think it's perfect in its own little sphere of the wrestling world going over to TNA. It's a real shame that Jeff Hardy ended up getting that alleged DUI arrest, because I think that they were in for a tag title run and they weren't that bad.
They were literally a week away from it. Like, they were going to win it the next week from the Bucks, and they got popped, and that killed that, which I didn't think that their run in general was good. I'll just be forthright like that. I didn't hate the idea of bringing him in, but it was clear that the gas tank was real close to empty. And outside of Jeff just literally throwing himself off of stuff, you know, like every time he did the Swanton, I felt so bad for the guy taking it because it was obvious that he wasn't doing anything to break the fall for him. You know, falling on them off the top rope with no kind of I'm hitting the mat first or anything to disperse the energy. Like, I forget if it was Private Party. There was one. It might have been against Private Party, but it's been months and months, so I don't really remember. But there was one where it's you couldn't pay me enough to take that. That just looks like hell. I hope that it works out for him. I'm sure it will. It'll be easier for them to, I think, accomplish what they're going for there. And best of luck to him. It was nice to have them in AEW for a little bit, but I think it was time to go their separate ways.
Yeah, I think it was too. And for me, the only reason why Matt ended up being brought in personally was because of the pandemic. I think the pandemic was the reason. And you know what? That's cool. Like, you needed to find ways to draw during the pandemic. And, well, you can't put butts in seats, so you got to have people draw to your television. And, hey, you know what? If it worked, cool. I don't have all those numbers in front of me right now. But you know what? Good on them for getting contracts. That's, I'll say that much.
I mean, they are absolute legends, you know, and I don't know that they're like Observer Hall of Famers, but they are very important guys of a certain period of wrestling history. Halfway by default, you could say they were the best tag team for several years in North America. And, you know, I mean, I think for better or worse, they had a tremendous impact on the industry. So very important figures. One thing I'll bring up from here is that, you know, with the way that, you know, Hardy left and, you know, the other recent contract expiries, you know, Jake Hager and Mark Henry and so forth, the way those are handled, like, by, they didn't make anyone, they didn't embarrass anyone on their way out or try to get heat off of them or job them out for, you know, the active guys or anything like that. They just let the contracts go quietly. And, you know, you got to wonder a little bit, you know, who else on the roster is headed that way, because there are reports out there. I think Meltzer's talked about it, and I know that Joe Lanza has, that there's going to be more contract expirations in the near future for AEW. And it makes a lot of sense, because we're at a point where a lot of those will be running out. And they're looking to, you know, obviously they could spend a lot of money if they wanted to, but they obviously want to stay under a certain budget they've set. And with the new new TV deal coming up, you would expect that they aim for, you know, outright profitability for the first time in their history. So, you know, I'm just thinking about people on the roster that I'm wondering about. And this isn't me reporting anything or saying that I've heard anything, but I think an obvious one is Danhausen. You have to think that he's just done with the company at this point, which is a shame, because he was an entertaining guy that, you know, was unique within the company in a certain way. And
they used him well for what he was, which is so important for a character like Danhausen.
Yeah, he was used well. And I think but I think that, you know, it's hard to not guess, you know, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but that there is an issue coming off of the whole CM Punk situation. Yeah, it's just tough. I think for everyone involved, it's just really an unfortunate situation, but you know, Danhausen has been a little spicy online, you know, a little passive aggressive about stuff. And, I think it's not really a surprise that if Danhausen is to leave, I don't, you know, I could see him going to WWE, I guess. He doesn't feel like a very WWE guy, but he is, you know, he's what he is. You know, this is very much an era where, you know, there's a certain contingent of WWE hardcore school put over whatever happens, like Ethan Page comes in and or Sean Spears or Brian Pillman Jr. and they act like it's a huge coup when
that's top five free agent signing ever, Ethan Page to you, Fred.
What you got, you know, there are free agents because AEW didn't pursue them to re-up. And you know, I like Ethan Page a little bit, and I like Sean Spears some, but and Brian Pillman Jr. exists, and I just was never a fan of him in the ring. It's not anything personal with him. I just he never looked like he had it to me. But you know, when those guys are coming in, and you know, there's people acting like it's a huge deal, the bar is so low that you know, someone who I think actually does have some something really special to them at all, like Danhausen, who I think has a certain charisma and ability in that sense that makes him very unique. I could see him working some in NXT. I don't know how it would work on the main roster, you know, and it's a question of just how committed WWE would be to him. But, yeah, worst case, I guess he'd be bouncing around, you know, the Halloween Havoc stuff or something. But, you know, there's got to be some spot for him. If not, I actually think TNA would be a very intriguing home for him in the sense that he could, like, fold right into this Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy stuff. I think he'd probably work really well with that. And maybe that could work out really well to his benefit. I don't know. And then, you know, there's another name that, you know, I kind of wonder about just because she's been out so long. It's Britt Baker. Again, there's no like concrete information out about it, but the fact she has been away for so long, and I don't, you know, they have been keeping injuries very uptight, very, well, I guess very close to the vest is what I'm trying to say. But she's been out for a long, long time, has not appeared on screen at all. Her last match was last September. So we are solidly at 9 months. You know, you just kind of got to wonder at this point, you know, if she is coming back, what the circumstances are and all that stuff. So, and again, you know, hoping for the best with them, with her. And yeah, I think it'd be good for AEW if she came back, but there's just nothing anyway with regards to her and, you know, just other people that you haven't seen in a while. And no isn't related to injury because, you know, like obviously Jamie Hayter is out because of injury. And so you would expect her to not be present for that reason.
I think it's important to note here, Fred, as we have the discussion about Britt Baker, that AEW has never had problems putting people on the shelf until they're ready to bring them back in a creative way and not force them to be on TV just to be on TV. I think that's really important to have that conversation because, look, Britt Baker is good. She's a talented person. But if you're not going to have anything good creatively when it comes to Britt, there's no point in having her on television. Because you don't want to necessarily waste her. And this goes for pretty much everybody. If you don't have anything for them, you're just like, it's kind of like a burning out thing. Now, at a certain level of star, you just make sure you have something for them. But I'm not super concerned about the Britt Baker thing. I am a little curious why they don't have anything for it. And I think a lot of that has to do with this Toni Storm, Mariah May thing. And now you have three feuds going on in the women's division, which is more than they've had in their entire history at one time, because you have Mercedes Moné and like she's doing the match with Stephanie Vaquerre, and she's going to win the IWGP women's title. And then you also have the Deonna Purrazzo Thunder Rosa feud that's about to finish, and now you have Willow Nightingale and what's her name? Chris Statlander. Like, you have four feuds technically going on in the company right now, or four storylines.
Yeah.
Where does Britt Baker fit into that? Like, it's not an insult on Britt. And I honestly think that's why Jamie Hayter isn't back too, because they just don't have the space to use them in a great way. So why use them at all? And we can talk about the fact that, hey, maybe you're just wasting resources, which I think is a really good point. But if you don't have anything creatively for them and you want them to come back where you have great creative, I'm fine with it. Like, I think it'd be better if Britt Baker was on television. Don't get me wrong. But to me, that's where we're at. And I think Britt was still dealing with some injuries at one point, and I think somebody said that she wasn't dealing with injuries anymore. I think that might have been Tony Khan. So we'll kind of see what transpires from that. But because it's AEW and how they've cycled people in and out with pay-per-view cycles, I'm not really that concerned.
Yeah, just something to keep an eye on for sure, because, you know, I would be somewhat surprised. I'd be pretty damn surprised if they let her walk without any kind of negotiation, just because, you know, she was their first woman wrestler signee. You know, she's an important part of that division up to this point in time. And I feel like it would be surprising to me if she left, you know, unceremoniously. I've just been clicking through their roster for a little bit, and most people are at least working like Ring of Honor, but Dralistico is a guy that hasn't been on an AEW thing for since last November. So I don't even know if he's still under contract of any sort. And The Blade hasn't appeared since January, which was on Ring of Honor, his last appearance. So, you know, maybe AR Fox, who hasn't been around since April. You know, without digging further, you know, there's probably some guys that are, you know, EJ Nduka hasn't done anything since October. Well, you remember when he was brought in and we were like, it'll be interesting to see them, you know, kick the tires with them and maybe use them on Ring of Honor. He's done four AEW things, and three of them were dark matches. And then the fourth was literally AEW dark way back in last January. And I think that's it.
Damn.
So, yeah. So just, you know, so you can have some, I don't know if you want to call it fun, but you can definitely dig through their roster and, you know, look at people and be like, I wonder what's going on here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, the other couple things I wanted to mention real quick, we talked about Ricochet yet?
No.
All right.
I think Ricochet is coming in.
It seems like it.
But, all the reporting coming out is very interesting. And I it feels like it's still all accurate because his last contracted appearance was Monday with he got murdered by Bron Breakker, which, hey, you know what? Cool. That's a good way to go out. You just keep building up a guy like Breakker who you believe to be a big piece of the future of your company. Awesome. Then it came out that he is done with his last contract. Date with the company, but technically his contract goes through July, which I think they did specifically because they didn't want him to go be on Dynamite on Wednesday, and then they said he might do another date. I don't know what this means, but look, if there's a way you can get Ricochet in the open, you get Ricochet in the Owen, you do it.
Yeah, that would be hell. That would be really cool.
Ricochet versus Shingo Takagi. Let's go.
That would rule. It would really rule.
Just get Shingo to the second round and have him then lose to Pac. Like, God.
Yeah, you know, I'm intrigued by Ricochet. It has been 6 years since he was, you know, really the king of the indies kind of deal, Ricochet, rather than just WWE afterthought. Ricochet, I think that they'll have to do some rehab with him if they do sign him and, you know, try to make something of him because it's just going to be.
Let me tell you what the rehab is going to be. Hey.
Oh, it's just to have him do
shit. Ricochet, yeah. You're going to go out there with Will Ospreay. You have 25 minutes. Go. Hey, Ricochet rules. Okay, we're done. Yeah. That's it. That's really all you have to do because he's still the same guy. He's still the guy that can do all the cool flippy-do stuff, that can do stuff that's just absolutely bonkers. Like, that's it.
Yeah. He won't be hard to recover, I don't think, but there is going to be some amount of, you know, we got to make him seem like a big deal. Now, what they could do, I guess, is just sign him to be their mid-card flippy guy. Instead of WWE's mid-card flippy guy. But I certainly
he should be a mid-card flippy guy. You know what he should do every single week, Fred? Just go out and have a cool-ass match. That's it. That's it.
Yeah, but you know what I was trying to say.
Yes, I know what you're trying to say.
And I think he can be a factor to some extent. I don't know that he's like a top-of-the-card guy, but he can definitely be slotted better than he was for most of his WWE run.
Yeah. 100%. I'd sign him in a heartbeat. I would push him. I would get him in the ring with some cool ass guys. And you know what would be awesome? I would love to see somebody like Powerhouse Hobbs just squash the hell out of him.
Oh, that'd be a fun match.
Oh, like Lance Archer even? Dude, mm-hmm. The amount of crazy bumps that a guy like Ricochet could take for a big guy like that would be just, oh. Be so much
and
fun.
Obviously, you know, Ricochet, Will Ospreay, Ricochet.
Did Ricochet ever wrestle Brock Lesnar? I think he did once.
He may have. Ricochet, the you know, Dante Martin, Darius Martin, all those guys. You know, there's a lot of intriguing matchups he could go, and he can work several styles, and I'd love to see him be a major factor. So
I'd love to see him in the G1.
That would be cool. He doesn't seem like a G1 guy, but it, you know.
Just have him third match on the card. Just do a 12, 13 minute sprint every single match. Like, hell yeah.
Other
Ricochet versus Mystico.
Wow, that would be sick.
Oh, please, 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 God. In 5 years, Ricochet versus Mascara Dorada 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, why not now?
Because Mascara Dorada is going to botch something like just insane, and I don't want him getting hurt. Because you know he's going to try and take something to the next level, and I don't want him hurting himself.
Other notes. Dax Harwood has the bruise from hell, apparently. In that ladder match with the Young Bucks, he got basically injured his back, and he tried to work through it. But after last week's collision match with Claudio and Wheeler Yuta, the hematoma swelled up to the size of a football, and the doctors look at it, and they made the very easy call to tell him to rest, because things aren't supposed to be football-sized on your body.
Did you see the exchange with him in Disco Inferno?
I did not, sadly.
Phenomenal. So Disco called out AEW for being unsafe and not caring about their wrestlers, and Dax just tore him a new asshole, saying, I didn't tell anybody about this because it was just a bruise, and then when it got bad, guess what they told me? You're going home. You're not wrestling with this. Wrestlers wrestle hurt all the time. If this happened in WWE, you wouldn't say anything because you're a fraud. Like, just all-time stuff. All-time stuff.
Disco sucks. Disco, Disco.
The only Disco that I will say is good is Disco Stew.
But yeah, hoping the best for Dax to recover. Gotta get that swelling down, man.
Is he gonna be back in time for this Blood and Guts?
You know, I guess we'll see. No guarantees. Yeah, I mean, you would hope, but with a injury like that, it's just kind of touch and go, I guess. Few other injuries to mention. Charlotte Renegade out injured. Hopes that she will be back soon. And Kiera Hogan has injured her shoulder, I should say. She last wrestled on April 27th. She put out of a date for next week in Chicago at an indie show for ASD. So hopefully, quick recoveries for both of those two. And I think that's more or less it as far as AEW news right now. I think
have something for you, Fred.
Yes, go ahead.
I believe this is from The Observer because a friend of the show, Griffin Peltier, shared it in our office Slack. I'm going to read it to you. This has to do with the BCC match on the 6-5 show, the 8-man tag. The CMLL talent Volador Jr. Magnus, what is it? Rujido?
Should be, yeah.
However you pronounce it. Who worked against the BCC on the 6-5 show, found out about the match almost at the last minute. Really, everyone did, but they found out at 11 p.m. Central Time. Reservations were made by AEW at the last minute for a flight that left at 3 a.m. They got to the building at 4 p.m. and then they had very little time to put together a match with two different styles. Plus, Wheeler Yuta was getting over a significant injury, believed to be a concussion, but nobody actually says the word. And the CML guys had to have it explained to stay away from his head.
Yep.
Yeah. I just found that nugget interesting and I thought I'd share it.
Yeah, AEW seems pretty unorganized. Oh, speaking of, which reminds me actually of another news note, brought in RD Evans recently of TNA and previously of WWE. They have a very full room at this point. If you know, it's kind of amazing how many writer type people they signed after. Previously, insisting they would not have any writers at all.
Yeah, it's it's disheartening, is what it is, man. Very disheartening. But we'll see. There's so many layers to what this could be. Tony just needs fucking nerds in the room. Dax, Brian Danielson, give Cody $10 million to come back. You have the money. You just paid Trevor Lawrence $275 million over 5 years. Just get the wrestling dorks in the room, please. I don't want the sports entertainment crap. I want wrestling nerds in the room. We need more of that. Because you know what? When those people were in there, wrestling was good, Fred. It was very good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been kind of a frustrating year for AEW. And I don't think RD Evans is going to do what they need to do to fix it. But I will say, in the smoothest transition I've ever done, I thought this week's Dynamite was pretty damn good.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, solid show.
I think we should start off at the top of the show. Will Ospreay versus Rey Fénix. Was that the most disappointing 4-star match of all time?
It really could. That's a good argument for it. I think I went 4.25 on it. But yeah, you know, with those two names, or you know, the ceiling, or the floor, I should say, is very high. And the ceiling is higher. And yeah, I will have to say that for what was really a great match, I feel like I can say pretty safely, it was also very disappointing. And you've got to think that if they did it 10 more times, that they'd have 10 better matches. But yeah, this was not what you would hope to see with these two. You know, it wasn't bad by any stretch.
I think what really took me out of it was at the very end, where Fénix is just like half sitting up waiting for the stomp.
Yeah, the stomp did not look good. Excuse me.
The stomp itself looked fine, but the setup for it and Ospreay staring over at Swerve and being like, my house. Like, all you had to do was take a quick glance and then do the spot. Like, don't take 10 seconds. Just take one and do it. Like, we already have it established that Swerve is ringside. And I did like how it worked after the match, where Swerve gets in his face and is like kind of yelling at him a little bit, but then he's like, just be glad we're friends.
Right. Yeah.
Because otherwise he would have killed him. Like,
I thought that angle was pretty good, the post match.
The post match was great. I thought the build up to it kind of sucked, and I thought they could have done a significantly better job. And I just wish they would have. That's honestly a minor gripe. And I think they overall, I wouldn't have minded if Fénix won there. Ospreay did hold both belts, and I'm going to take a victory lap. They are preparing for double belt Ospreay. They are going to have him hold both titles, defend both titles. I said it, and I'm going to be proven right. Victory lap.
Are they going to retire the one, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
They might want to.
they might want to merge.
Yeah, I was thinking
the international title at some point, but I don't think that they're going to retire it. I think what they did with the U.S. title, and was it just the U.S. title? Or...
No, it's a triple crown. They had the...
No. What New Japan just did to make the global championship.
Oh.
Didn't they merge two belts?
I think they did.
Yeah. I'm just blanking. But yeah, you don't need like a million titles. I do like this whole continental crown. I don't get defending it outside of the actual tournament itself.
Yeah.
Like, I guess in New Japan, you defend the G1 briefcase, but that's your prize. You're defending the prize, not the fact that you won the G1.
Right. The title match.
To me, even though the belt would technically be the prize, it's not the same. And I wish that wasn't like an actual title belt. I just wish it was like, yeah, I'm the champion, bitch. Like, kind of just a cool thing to hold over everybody's head.
Yeah.
But hey, you know what? Maybe that's just me.
No, I agree with you. I also think that it's a little I don't know. I don't think it really benefits anyone. I thought there were several good matches on the show. I liked that. I liked the.
I can't remember who Mercedes Moné wrestled, but that girl was good. That was fun to watch.
Zuxis, I'm going to mess up pronouncing it. That one, I haven't seen her too often. Zuxis.
From CMLL.
Yes, yes. I thought that was a very good match. Not as good as the Willow one that Mercedes had, but about a step behind. I like that, and I also like the trios match. That was a very solid, fun, you know, 1992 WCW style six man that I like quite a bit.
Mark Briscoe rules.
But yeah, he's great.
I did find it really odd that you had the TV champ Kyle Fletcher pin the ROH World Champ Mark Briscoe.
Maybe
I wonder if that's going to be setting up for when they hold what is it, Death Before Dishonor in Texas next month.
Yeah. I do wonder if that's going to be the main event. I liked that match. It was good. I was not blown away by Jack Perry, Dustin Rhodes. I thought that was okay-ish. And frankly, they gave Dustin Rhodes too much. This is one thing that I think is a fair criticism of AEW is they have these matches with top-level guys facing people that are, you know, notably lesser. I mean, look, I love Ray Phoenix, but in the pecking order for AEW, he's obviously below Will Ospreay. And obviously, you know, the Dustin is far below where Jack Perry is in terms of getting pushed. And I think it's very silly to have, like, Dustin Rhodes even hit a crossroads, let alone, you know, almost, you know, get the three with it.
See, I'm gonna fight back on you here. I think your overall criticism is fair. I don't agree with it here because like Jack Perry may be a top guy now, but he hasn't really proven that he's a top guy in the ring yet. He just happens to now be associated with the Bucks and Okada. So
he should have done it here by beating Dustin Rhodes in 3 minutes. You know.
You know what? I can understand that, but it's also Dustin Rhodes. Rhodes is too experienced and too good to be beaten in 3 minutes, especially by somebody who's smaller. I think the criticism that you'd have is by booking him against Rhodes in the first place rather than how he ended up beating Rhodes, because I think how like the process of beating Rhodes is fair. Rhodes is just too big and too good to get beaten in 3 minutes.
Then don't book the match. Like, there's an easy
solution. And that's my thing. I think that's your criticism more than how Perry ended up beating Rhodes.
Yeah, but if you're going to do this match, you gotta have Perry win and have him win pretty easily, I feel like. And they didn't do that. And I felt like that was not the best booking.
We should ask Odie what he thinks. What do you think, Odie? He doesn't say anything. He's sleeping.
Yeah, smart dog.
Yeah.
You know, that was just kind of my big thoughts there. We have MJF planning his return to the ring, which is just kind of funny because he's doing it when the first week they're not against the finals. And God,
so smart. Oh, this guy.
Free.
This
is Hulk Hogan shit right here.
You know, he studied his Mid-Atlantic and Mid-South tapes and his old school WWF. This is fucking phenomenal. Not only does he come back after all that is done, he returns to television when there's no NBA, no NHL. His first match back is going to be no NBA, no NHL. Plus, it's going to open Dynamite with a great lead-in, and it's going to be commercial-free.
Yep.
God, this guy is so good. It's just fucking perfect. Like, look, we can be like, oh, I hated this, I hated that. I still think he screwed Wardlow a little bit. I thought the Brochacho stuff was dog shit. God, it's good to see real workers in wrestling, though.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it is smart. And also, if you look, you know, if you analyze it at all, transparent. That's okay. That's not a problem. It's just what it is, you know, so.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero, you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to... Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs, because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? It's a, whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Just phenomenal.
What a guy. What an absolute dude.
And you know what? That match with Roosh is going to rock.
Oh, yeah. And also, I got to put over Roosh for his squash, because, you know, it's a squash. No one's going to be recommending it a year's in or anything, but he's great at squashes. He is very good at just killing dudes. And I enjoy watching it. You know, I thought it was a fun little murder. And Roosh is one of those guys that really gets how to do a squash, and, you know, as the guy squashing. So good for him.
Yeah. I will say this. It would not shock me if we get a real, like, old school Roosh Mexico Lucha walk-in brawl. Because, you know, MJF would love that.
Yeah. He would be an ideal guy. I think they could have a very good match that way. I am looking forward to this match, and I think it'll be good. It's just going to be interesting to see how that works out. I'm going to ask you a question about MJF, because we have coming up our 30 best wrestlers under 30 list. We're going to do that again at voicesofwrestling.com. And my question to you is, how are you going to vote for MJF? Because I think if you're just looking at talent, it's without a doubt that, you know, in terms of like in the ring and promos and all that, he should probably be the number one pick. But he also feels like he's unique in that you have to account for the fact that he's been involved with a lot of questionable creative, I guess I'll say. And I'm unsure of how to approach that as a, as an analyst?
MJF's going to depend solely on his booker. And I think that's what's going to really separate him from being one of like the all-time greats versus just really, really great. Because I think we've seen with Okada, he's been able to thrive no matter what situation he's in. He had one booker pretty much his entire career. He goes to with Tony Khan, and he's thriving in a completely different style, completely different role and language. But MJF needs somebody who's going to be willing to tell him, fuck no. He needs somebody who's going to be able to filter his ideas. And I'll never forget one of the big selling points, and obviously the WCW documentary on the WWE Network, where it was completely WWE washed. Let's just be real. But I'll never forget that when they started talking about Vince Russo, one of the big selling points was Vince Russo did have a lot of great ideas, but he needed somebody to filter out the shit. And that's, to me, what MJF is. He's got a lot of great ideas, but he needs somebody to filter out the shit. And that's why we've seen so much great from him. But then the second he really got to book his own stuff, it kind of sucked because there wasn't enough of a filter. And to me, that's going to be the big thing between him being like a true all-timer, where we're talking about him being one of the best in the history of professional wrestling, versus this guy was great and we're talking about him as a fringe observer Hall of Famer, because he needs somebody to be that filter. He does. And it's not that he's bad. It's not that he's this, that, or the other thing. Most of us need a filter. We need somebody to tell us, dude, this sucks. Don't do it. And I think MJF needs that more than a lot of people. And I think we've seen a lot of that bear out on national television. The stuff with Adam Cole sucked. He basically admitted that it sucked. And I think that we're in a position where he can like be really great. Like,
he's got all the skills.
The CM Punk feud, phenomenal.
Brandy Anderson feud was really good.
Oh, the Iron Man match was great. The dog collar match with CM Punk was my match of the year.
Fantastic.
It was my match of the year over the Briscoes FTR dog collar match. Just incredible. Absolutely incredible stuff. Then you had Wembley. Wembley sucked ass. You got to filter out the shit, and Tony has to be that filter for him. He really does. Because if he can be that filter, MJF is not even 30, and we could consider him like a top 5, top 10 wrestler in the world.
Yeah, he's got a really high ceiling. Really high ceiling. And, but I mean, you know, it's fair to give him quite a bit of blame for trying to make it, you know, with his war for 2024, you know, gimmick. You know, he kind of made AEW look uncool, and that's the last thing they needed, you know. And the Wardlow storyline was an absolute disaster with how it ended. Totally cut out the legs on Wardlow, which he's never recovered from and may never actually be able to. And then the whole Adam Cole storyline just sucked all the oxygen out of the room. It was not good. Not good. So, you know, I think it's a really fascinating question of how you approach that, because I could see, you know, I have him number one on my list, and I probably will put him, if not number one, you know, top five. But if you want to penalize him for what is now, you know, a trend, you know, multiple matches along these ways, I think that's fair. I can't really disagree with you. So I just think it's a really interesting thing to you know, analyze. And if you want to talk about it, you can do that by going to our Discord channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord.
Yeah.
Just look for The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy under the VAW Podcast Network. You can also email us at hungypod, that's hungepod@gmail.com. But I don't know. It's an interesting situation. Speaking of, I also don't think worked out. You know, I think that there's been moments where I've been amused by Tony Storm, whole thing here. But also, I have to, I think it's pretty obvious that it hasn't worked out the way that you would hope. I don't think she's as over as you would have hoped. I don't think it's been the draw or as successful as you would hope. And, it's a shame. But it looks like we're finally going to blow up the on-screen partnership with Mariah May and involving Mina Shirakawa with that, who is a damn good worker. I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how that works out and how the crowds react. I don't think that Tony is like wildly over right now. I don't think it's been an outright disaster either. I think it's, it's kind of somewhere in the middle.
The big problem with the Tony Storm thing is it took way too long to figure out how to perfectly present her character. And so outrageous early on that it really took away, because this version of the character is good.
Mm-hmm.
It just took too long and that ruined it.
Yeah, I think what she's doing right now is pretty good. For a couple months there, and certainly they were flailing around trying to find the right direction with it, which is unfortunate because I thought it was a germ of a really good idea. Toni Storm is very witty. You listen to her talk on commentary or do her promos, and she, usually drops at least one like really killer line. These post-show press conferences she just takes over with her act are wildly entertaining, I think. I don't know that they really build to anything, but just in terms of entertaining me, they definitely succeed. And I'm glad that they did figure it out eventually, but it took a while. So, yeah. Outside of that, Mode, we already talked about a little bit, but had a nice outing. Zuxis, I think, acquitted herself well. I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly. I should have double checked that before we did the show, but I'm not that smart. And I think that's really more or less all I have off of this week's Dynamite. And I haven't had a chance to watch Collision yet or Rampage, so nothing much else to add there, I guess. Do you got anything else?
Well, I recommend Rampage because it was just a sicko show. It was just four cool ass matches. Just go watch it. Yeah. No notes, just no talking. Just go watch it and just enjoy wrestling. Don't think about canon. Don't think about this or that. Just go watch wrestling. That's kind of what Rampage is good for now. It's just a good palate cleanser for professional wrestling. And I recommend that. I do want to mention this, and I'm going to continue screaming it from the rooftops. Willow Nightingale is a top two star in this company, and I cannot wait for her real ascension to begin.
I think it already has. I can't.
No, it has, but it hasn't begun the way it's going to. Like you feel it's on the precipice of becoming really special, and Willow is going to be, in my opinion, the biggest success story of this women's division, and we're going to talk about her forever. And just like when I can't get over how good she is, how good she's gotten, how much she's improved, awesome. And how fucking over she is. It's not just, hey, I'm going to chant CEO. Yeah. No, when she comes out of that tunnel, she gets mega pops and they want to see her. They don't want to just chant some stupid catchphrase. They She's want over. Willow over, over. If Will Ospreay didn't exist in this company, she'd be the most over in this company. I firmly believe that.
I don't know. You're wrong, to be honest.
I'm going to scream it from the rooftops. Willow Nightingale is a capital S star, and they need to push her. They need to push her like Will Ospreay.
Going back to the 30 under 30 thing, she's turned 30 since last year's ranking. But I was looking at the list where I had her like 29th last year, and I would have had her top five this year. She's so good right now. She's possibly the hottest act in the entire company.
She needed a little bit of time. She needed patience.
They figured it out.
Yeah. And you know what? The gift of Mercedes Moné's broken ankle is the best thing that could have happened to her career. And it sucks for Mercedes, but good Lord, did she learn a lot going over to Stardom, going over to New Japan, working with women of all styles and learning how to use her body, her power. Because you know what? And men's wrestling deal with the same thing. Bigger wrestlers can struggle to really figure out how to work. I know I've heard, I think it was Lance Archer that talked about it, where it takes you sometimes like 10 years. And we all know the more monster bit that Gato's just yelling at Lance Archer about. It takes a while to figure out how to work. Well, Willow works a lot different than all these women. She's not exactly that big as far as like a human being sense, but she's so much bigger than all these wrestlers, and figuring out how to work to her size and her power and utilize that. I think she's really coming around in the same way you would see from a guy like Lance Archer. And I think that's just, it's great. Capital S star Willow Nightingale.
Yeah, she rules. It's one of their biggest successes of the past year, I think, is her push and her success with it. So very awesome stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's it for me this week. You got anything else?
No, Willow Nightingale is a Capital S star. I'm going to keep screaming it until people start believing it. No, that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening. A little bit of an abbreviated show because it's a chaotic time. Fred is about to try and stump a bunch of people from Liberia on really cool questions. That is a shoot, by the way. I'm being serious. And we're going to be back next week. And eventually, leading up to Forbidden Door, we're going to have a huge-ass preview talking about the show, talking about what they did, why they didn't do other things, what they could have done more, because I think that in itself is going to be a really, really interesting talking point. And we're going to continue breaking down this really interesting company right now, because there's so many layers and so many things that are great and so many things that kind of suck. And we're going to be here for all of it. With that said, I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Go give us a 5-star review. We'll see you next time.
Take care, everyone.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.